وانا الليله اللي بعد ما عين الرياح الشامي ليله ليروي ليلو يا صلي لروي دول ليلي لي على لحم ليلو بيار ويليلو شامي ليلة ليوي ليلة ديري شامي ليلة ليار ويليلو علي ليلة لبواب ولولم تفتح شامي ليلة ليار ويليلو وانا الليلة لبعت معي للريح الشامي ليلة ليار ويليلو ياصلي لروي دول ليلي ليه على لحب ليلو بيار ويليلو يا يلي لي وروح سالي للملي علي ليلي هم يار ويليلو وطالا لا لا تلور بليلي واشتقنا لليلي هم يار ويليلو يا طليل الجروح ليلي للأحبابي واصلي للهم يار ويليلو واصلي للهم ودولي على راسي ليلي لهم يار ويليلو وسالي للملي ليلي للمحبوب ليلي لهم يار ويليلو يار ويليلو يار ويليلو يار ويليلو
Wow. That was really, really beautiful. That was from Rotana. That was Freedom Code. It's a song that was just playing for our meditation. We love Rotana. And we're so grateful to everyone who's joining us today for Practices for Care and Endurance. We are going to share practices that help us to remember that we are in bodies, remember that we're in community, and remember that we're on earth together here, that there's ground and resource for us. And my name is Adrienne Marie Brown. I'm going to moderate us through a bit. The focus is really to be in practice together. So really orient yourself towards that and really notice if you are asking questions to pull yourself out of practice, let yourself drop back into practice and stay in with us. There's going to be resources mentioned throughout, and we're actually going to be gathering a document of those that we can share with everyone afterwards. So feel free to take your own notes, but also you can trust us and we'll be also taking notes and writing the resources down to share with you afterwards. We're going to go about 90 minutes is the plan. Stay as long as you can. And the invitation is to really stay in your body. So if you need to lay down as you're listening, if you need to get into a more cozy position, if you need to take a bath while you're listening, if you need to do yoga while you're listening, really tune in and let this be a time where you are taking care of yourself as we are together. And to begin with that, I'm going to, first of all, say for each of you, to say a thank you to the land that you are on in this moment. So an acknowledgement in a different way. Thank you to the earth that under duress and under constant attack and under constant change is holding all of us right now. Thank the land that you're on. Thank the peoples of that land. Thank the water of that land. Thank the trees and the plants of that land. Thank the people who work that land and care for that land and steward that land. And then thank yourself for making the time and the space that you've made to be here today. If you want to, I always love to thank myself with a little touch. Place your hands on your heart. Give yourself a little hug. Just like, thank you, body. Thank you, time. Thank you, space. Thank you, schedule. Thank you, brain. Gratitude for showing up in this way. I'm going to invite us to just take some breath together here. So you can let your eyes close if that feels more comfortable to you, or let them get soft. But drop in to your body, your solar system. And let breath keep dropping you in to yourself. So taking a nice deep breath in. As you release, let yourself get heavier on the earth. Let yourself sink. Keep breathing in deeply, in as deeply as you can. And let it come out naturally. Just notice if there's places in your body that feel like breath can't reach them. That they have become breathless. And as you breathe, just imagine the breath coming in, not pushing, not pulling, but just holding that place, just wrapping air, wrapping breath around the tightness. As you breathe, keep dropping out from the head, down from the head. See what you can notice below your neck. Notice the miracle of your breath, how precious each one is. You can feel the pounding of your heart. Notice that too. Each beat, each pulse is so precious. And in this nice deep breath, notice if you can that you are precious. As you are right now, nothing to fix, nothing to extract. As we move into our evening, you can let your eyes open, and you're going to hear lots and lots of different possibilities for practice, things that are grounding to us, thoughts that are grounding to us. And the idea is not to overwhelm you with a bunch of practices to do, but to offer you a garden of possibilities that you can go to anytime you need it. Anytime you're like, I feel overwhelmed. This is becoming too much. I don't know how to watch what I'm watching. I don't know how to be where I have to be right now. the ideas that you can be like, oh, I remember Layla told me I could do this and that could help me right now, or Spenta guided me over here. The idea is to give you this abundance of practices that are relevant for moments like this and for this particular moment. I'm going to hand it over now to Hala Alian, who is my new best friend and my new beloved, to ground us in our being here and begin our path.
Thank you so much, Adrienne. Thank you all for coming today. I feel very grateful to be in community with all of you. And I think I just wanted to speak a little bit on and sort of like framing what we're hoping to do today and what we're hoping people can get out of it. To echo what Adrienne was just saying, I'd like to invite all of us to think about care within a collectivist, community-based framework. And so we've talked about this before, but I conceptualize ideas of self-care as often when we hear about it within this culture, it's through a very individualistic lens. And so we talk about self-care as sort of it's both the process and the destination, is to like feel better, is to feel less of something that's uncomfortable, is to feel more at ease, is to feel more pleasure. Again, none of those things are bad or to be looked down on. Those are all important. It's just that within a collectivist framework, we consider that act of care as having another step. It becomes one like kind of a rest stop en route to something larger. And so we think of engaging in self-care from a collectivist framework because, to paraphrase Audre Lorde, it becomes an act of self-preservation. And so we're preserving ourselves not just to feel better, not just to replenish, but so that we, replenished, can go back to attending to things that matter to us, can go back to the people that matter to us, the places, the causes, the value systems. And so I think anyone who's feeling really burnt out right now or overwhelmed or furious or rageful or frustrated or, you know, in grief or grieving, that's completely normal. I think that those are actions to be having. It's what we are bearing witness to, which is outside the norm. It's what we're bearing witness to, which in many senses is unbearable. And we have to think about the ways that we can replenish ourselves in order to keep showing up for the task, which for most of us, yes, we want to think about ways to be action oriented, but at the most fundamental level, showing up right now for this moment is about bearing witness. And so I'm really, you know, I'm excited to hear from everyone on the panel, both in terms of their personal relationship to care, and to learn from them, and also to hear kind of maybe how they got there and how they conceptualize care to sort of a larger value and action-oriented system. I want to use art as an example because I can speak to something that's very, very connected to myself, which is, you know, the truth is that I'm a poet, I'm a writer. Poems are not going to save Gaza right now. You know, they're not. Poetry and literature and art are not going to save what needs saving. They're not going to stop what needs stopping right now. They are not a replacement to action, to policy change, to ceasefire, to an end of to the occupation, to Palestinian self-determination, dignity, rights. They're not a replacement to those things. And at the same time, what I would offer dialectically is that art also fortifies, it sustains. It can help remind us of what we're doing and why we're doing it. And so art, like other forms of care that we're going to hear about today, can become useful as sort of compasses, you know, or rest stops, or places that we can catch our breath, places where we can rehearse ideas, where we can sharpen our ideas, where we can clarify our thinking, because this is a time where we really need to be clear on our thinking and our action and our direction and our language. And they can be places to find community. And so I think we can and likely need to sit in both of those truths, that we need action. And we also need whatever it is that's going to help us continue showing up for action. and showing up for the things that matter, because there's a lot of systems at play right now and always that really bank on exhaustion. They bank on fatigue. They bank on burning out compassion-wise. They bank on people looking away. And so in that sense, in some ways, kind of your greatest currency is your capacity to build your endurance. It's your capacity to keep looking. And even if that, whatever that means for you, right? It's your capacity to, even if you need to step back for a little bit, it's to step back in order to be able to replenish so that you can return to the work, however you define that. And I think for me, a lot of that revolves around this idea of bearing witness and thinking about narrative. And I think at a time like this, when we're talking about care, we're kind of automatically talking, like I said, about bearing witness and how to make that process sustainable and actionable. And so, you know, I would, because I'm sure there's, you know, there's all sorts of people that are joining us today at different stages of learning things and engaging with history and asking questions. What I want to say is that we're all made of narratives. We're all born into them. We're all born into stories that help us make sense of our lives, about the world, about our place within it, about other people, who to trust, who to fear, who's against us. And stories teach us things about justice and power and repair and connection. And we are, speaking of being stewards, we are stewards of our narratives and we are responsible for them. And we're responsible for holding them up to the light. We're responsible for testing their truth. And I will say, I say that with complete humility, none of us are immune to the power of narrative. And none of us are immune to the power of reclaiming them and rewriting them and investigating what we've been told and where and in whose words and in whose voice. And so I want to say, if there are people in the room with us right now who are in the process of doing that work, which is difficult work, it's extremely brave and extremely painful, of investigating some of the narratives they've come up with, I will, to paraphrase a conversation Adrian and I had earlier on, that there's a saying in 12-step programs that I love, which is that you're never late to a meeting. And I would say that here, in that you're never late to justice, and you're never late to engaging with truth. You're never late to engaging with history, with reexamining the things that we've been told. At the end of the day, we bear witness because that is the task of the human, particularly in moments of crisis. That's the task of all of us anywhere, anytime there is suffering. And we bear witness because it is what we owe those who do not have the same access that we do. Folks who do not have microphones, don't have representatives, don't have votes, we bear witness because this is how we build new narratives. And oftentimes, this is the most beautiful task of bearing witness. It's which is to say, being a human, is to be able to say, I see what you see, I grieve what you grieve, and I will continue to bear witness with you alongside you. So I'm very grateful to you all for being here and bearing witness to each of us. And yeah, I feel very, yeah, humbled to be in everyone's presence.
Thank you, Hala. You're amazing and the best. And I want people to know too, that this is Hala's idea. Everything good that's been happening is Hala's idea. We're heading into other sessions. I'm not going to give a big bio for each person. Each person has a massive life and multiple talents and multiple ways that they show up in the world. Today, they're showing up as a practitioner. And so that's how we're going to ground and be with each other. So the next person that we're going to get to learn from and be with is Spenta Khandelwala. Spenta Khandelwala. Hi, love.
Hello.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me here to talk with you all. My name is Spenta. I do want to say I'm a member and organizer with AROC, the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, and a healer working at the intersection of trauma and oppression, mostly through acupuncture and somatic training and coaching. And I want to start by saying, for the past 5 weeks, we've been enduring trauma. And this genocide has been a shock to our system, and it's been a repeated and recurring shock to our system. The level of what we are witnessing and what we are seeing, things that we, most of us, don't think about seeing in our lifetime, every time is a new shock. And this is more than dysregulating, but to say the least, it's dysregulating, and it kicks us into a state of hypervigilance where we're alert, we're on guard, we're watching. And I want to say there's nothing wrong with that state of hypervigilance. I think that vigilance is a mark of our humanity. I think, like Hala was saying, that witnessing is it is what makes us human. It is what makes us seekers of justice. And as we are living through this, it's very normal to be experiencing a whole host of feelings: fear, rage, grief, numbness, isolation, dread. Also physical feelings, like many of us might find ourselves in a hyper or adrenalized state, having trouble sleeping, having nightmares. Others of us may find ourselves in a really depressed state and actually pulling up the covers and not wanting to get out of bed. This ongoing threat to our nervous system for so long can lead to all types of ways to feel completely out of sorts and not really know how to get back. So I just want to take a minute and honor whatever you've been experiencing. That's just very real. And it makes sense. Many of us are organizing, we're pouring out into the streets, we're trying to find ways to participate day and night, and our lives as we know it have been disrupted, and so is our sense of well-being or finding our well-being. And this may lead us to avoid doing things to take care of ourselves for a lot of reasons. I think what Hala was saying about how we see self-care as so individualistic here is one of the biggest ones. We fear that if we pause and feel, that we will just fall apart and we may never be able to come back together, or that we just can't fall apart right now. We have things to do. We have work to get done. Or that it's too selfish or indulgent, or we just have plain old survivor's guilt. And we all have limits. We all just have real limits. And if we cross those limits, whatever they are, some of us have limits way out here, some of us have limits much closer, but wherever those get crossed, we can start to feel easily irritated. We can feel resentful. We can start to trust no one. We can start to feel unclear or confused. And we can start to make poor decisions because we literally may start to have decision fatigue. And so to build on what Hala was saying about self-care, I never think self-care is an accurate or useful term right now or ever. I think that getting right with ourselves is about figuring out how we be within the collective and community and doing the best job that we can now and always. We know that ceasefire is a minimum. It is just the beginning. And we have ongoing work. We're not just talking about enduring today, we're talking about enduring until we're all free. So when we're thinking about this idea of care, we really want to think about the longevity, and that we don't want to stay in a trauma response if we can get out of it, that it's not helping us. And I think we can engage in practices and care that lets a little air out of the balloon without totally collapsing or without fully popping. I think one way we start to come back to ourselves is, and to get more present, to come out of that state of hypervigilance or dissociation or not being able to be with ourselves, is by starting to bring care and curiosity to whatever it is that we're feeling. It's so easy in moments like this to get hard on ourselves or get hard on our loved ones or our comrades for our behavior. And I want to say, usually getting harsh with ourselves or each other is not a way out of our response. It usually takes a lot of compassion to get some of those armoring layers to come off and to find ourselves again, to know that it is safe enough to be somewhat inside of ourselves, even through all of this horror. And when we stop trying to avoid our feelings, we stop avoiding ourselves. And that can bring us a little more online. Adrian asked me to mention specifically, if you go in to seek care, like acupuncture, or I think any kind of holistic modality where someone else is going to help work with you or guide your healing. Oh. Hello, everyone. What might people say, and what might you say, or what might you ask of a practitioner? And so just a couple ideas. You can ask yourself if you if you need to feel more open or actually more contained. And you can talk about that with the practitioner. You could just talk about physical symptoms. If it feels too hard to talk about the emotional, or you can't actually tell what you're feeling emotionally, usually in a holistic modality, we'll find our way to the emotions and to the spirit. But mostly, I just want to say, it's okay to say that you need to not fall apart and that you need help keeping it together. And it's okay to say that you can't really feel and you need help being able to unnumb. Like many of you, my first healing came through organizing, and I think it has the ability to reweave so much brokenness, breaking isolation and bringing us together, elevating our voice and feeling on purpose. I think oppression is the ultimate form of gaslighting, and I believe fighting for justice is one of its best antidotes. Understand and enact your best contribution. It's really important for us as humans to feel we're on purpose and to have agency. So talk with your friends, talk with your family. What's the contribution that you can and want to make right now? For some, it's leading. For others, it's accompaniment. But it's many acts of care and solidarity that moves us forward. And it all matters if it gets us to a free Palestine. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Spenta. That was really helpful, especially this. I know it's like, oh, right. But that's such a novel idea that's like, oh, I can choose whether I open or whether I contain more. I can like choose these things. So thank you so much. Next, we're going to hear from our beloved Adaku Uta, who is calling in from Ghana right now. And I was like, it's going to be late. Are you okay? And Adaku was like, I'm going to look fly and I'm going to be amazing. Isn't that what you said?
That is what I said. And I'm coming with it.
Here you are. Thank you, beloved.
Thanks, beloved. I love you.
Hey, comrades.
My name again is Adaku. I use all pronouns, and I am a non-binary queer person from Nigeria. I bring the lands of Ghana and Nigeria with me. And in true Igbo fashion, it's important to begin with gratitude. So I want to offer reverence and just deep awe and appreciation to the Black and Brown and Indigenous ancestors and transcestors from Gaza and all across the diaspora, Sudan and Haiti and Congo, who are with us right now and have met apocalypse over and over again, have met genocide over and over again, and are choosing to build new worlds alongside with us. I am utterly grateful for their depth of care, for their generational commitment, and their congruence in this moment. And I invite the ones that want to roll up, squat up with us, to be with us. And I pour libation, as is our tradition. Life meeting life, water meeting water, to honor their lives. I also want to give reverence to the
Palestinian people. I am the child of parents who survived the Nigerian Biafran War. And in that war, over 2 million Nigerians, specifically Igbo people, my people, were killed at the hands of genocide. And Palestine was one of the first countries to say, we see you, we see you. And we're going to honor Biafra as its own sovereign nation. And we're also going to send food, and we're going to send water, and we're going to send coins. And I would like to believe that I am alive, my parents are alive, because of the modeling and the depth of transnational solidarity that Palestine offered to Nigeria, and specifically Igbo people. And so I want to call that energy of transnational solidarity amongst us. And truly, this is how we survive across generations. And I believe I am proof of that. And to all of y'all for giving a damn and for bringing your grief and your rage and your numbness and your I don't know how I feel right now-ness, and being real about where you are and having that move alongside how you act. Thank you so much. So Adrian, Spenta, and I have been trained in a lineage of somatics that has been really useful for me in these times. And one of the things that we begin with often is to start with our commitment. What are we committed to in these times? My commitment for the last year and a half has been, I am a commitment to sustainable transformation rooted in our divinity and our interdependence. I'm a commitment to sustainable transformation rooted in our interdependence and our divinity and our interdependence. And this isn't just unique to somatics. Black queer feminists have been talking about this for mad long, inviting us to turn our attention, not just from a narrow focus of ourselves and short-term wins, but this long-range view of freedom. And so for you, I have four questions for you, whether you're rocking by yourself or you got a crew, you got your hood. What's your commitment? What are you committed to this moment? And where are you aligned with that commitment? Where are you misaligned with that commitment? What are the conditions that are impacting the way that you are moving in alignment or out of alignment? And then probably one of the most important questions, what do you need to be practicing right now so that what we are committed to is not just living from the neck up and intellectualized, but it is how we breathe, it is how we dance, how we look at each other, how we sing, how we're in the streets, how we're in the bed with our lovers. What are you practicing? What do you need to stop doing? What do you need to start doing to move closer in alignment with your commitment? I believe that one of the mortal flaws of any fascist regime, and we've talked about it a couple of times, is disconnection and overemphasis on extraction and transaction. And that is why fascism will fail consistently. And that is why the people, us, will keep winning, because we keep turning towards each other. And so in moments like this, where the terror is huge, and the violence is deep, safety can feel just like, what can we cling to right now? And what I like to look towards are reliable rhythms, rhythms that exist inside of our bodies and rhythms that exist around us that are bigger than us. So I think of the rhythms of our breath. Thank you, Adrian, for calling that in. I think of the rhythms of sound, whether that's the sound of your heartbeat or it's the sound of Rihanna at the club, because some of us need to shake some stuff out right now. Or maybe it's the rhythm of water, the salt water in your tears, the water from the oceans, the rivers, or the shower, the bath that you're in right now. The rhythms of the moon. Shout out to the new moon in Scorpio right now and all the Scorpios in the building, teaching us to go deep into the dark, deep in the dark, so that we can source our transformation from what is murky and messy. And also shout out to the rhythm of the seasons. I know in the US right now on the north side where I'm usually at is cold. And what we need in winter is going to look different from what we need in the summer. So where do we need to get information in this winter time? Where do we need to warm up? And then, of course, plants. And plants for me have been just one of my best comrades. And I'm a sixth generation herbalist. Without plants, my mom literally would not be here. It's one of the medicines that she relied on to be alive. And my go-tos are adaptogens. And these are herbs that they listen to our stress responses and figure out how to modulate, how to bring more homeostasis into the body. And then also how to whether increase or lower the immune system based off of what the body needs. So my three favorites right now are rhodiola, ashwagandha, and tulsi. And oh, Terry already did it, or Carrie already did it. Thank you, Carrie, for dropping in my little recipe book. There's a couple of recipes in there that last 5 minutes to a little bit longer, whatever you have time for, if you want to drink a tea or a bath or caress yourself with an oil. There's some recipes there, as well as some invitations so that we are not being extractive with plants as well. And two more things that I want to share with you. You know, when our hearts break this much, it can feel, we can forget that grief and action can coexist. Grief doesn't have to overshadow action. Action doesn't have to disappear grief. And I'm really grateful for the formations that I'm in right now that are aligning grief with action, being in alchemy together, being teachers for each other. So I work with the Building Movement Project. Shout out to the folks up here in the house. And we've been working with Muslims for Just Futures. We've been co-facilitating rapid response calls for the last couple of weeks with Arab, Palestinian, and Muslim communities. And it's been beautiful constellation of people coming together. And one of the things that's emerged from these spaces is a rapid response resource guide that has actions that you can get in and fit into. Resources if you're someone who has been doxxed, been discriminated in your workplace, if you're looking for mental health resources, it's up in there. And it's an interdependent resource. So take what you can that feels resonant with you and then leave something to add to the ocean, to add to the garden of abundance. And thank you again, Carrie, for putting this out there. And then the last thing is I want to shout out my comrade, Deepa Iyer, who has been lifting up a framework for a number of years called the Social Change Ecosystem Framework. And, you know, it invites us to really align with what our values are in this particular moment and then get really clear about what your role is. We can do everything, but together we can do a lot of things. So maybe you are a weaver. Bringing together folks who are fighting for bodily sovereignty and folks who are fighting for Palestinian liberation together. Maybe you are a storyteller, dispelling the fucked up myths in the media. Maybe you're a healer, using healing as a political strategy to make sure that we are sustained into the future. And maybe you're a disruptor, making those calls in your bed or you're showing up out in the streets. There is a role for you. So there's 10 different roles, find your role, and your roles might change depending on the season. And if you're confused about how to do it, reach out to us, we got you. And I wanna lift up Rasha Abdullah's words to close. Y'all, genocides begun do not have to be completed. The long genocide of the Palestinian people is both ongoing and not inevitable. It is not inevitable. It is not inevitable. We can refuse it, and we must. Join us in refusing to aid or abet genocide. And may all the brokenness that we're feeling right now, may we use it as medicine. May we use it as medicine to heal ourselves, to heal each other, and to heal precious land. Thank you, beloveds.
Thank you, Adaku. medicine. Thank you for making us a zine of herbal recipes. All right, we're going to keep it moving, and we're going to go next to Sepide Moafi. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm really grateful to have the space to listen and to slow down and really hear each other, and also just share a little bit of my perspective, how I've been approaching this. So one of the spaces that I give myself to is the International Rescue Committee as an ambassador. The IRC works all over the world to help displaced people who are affected by humanitarian crises. And one thing that's clear from my work at the IRC is that you're always on the heels of every crisis. You can never really catch up to the need, and you always feel like you're behind, like you can never do enough. Currently, there are over 50 conflicts around the world. 360 million people are in need of humanitarian aid. 110 million people are displaced globally. And these are numbers from last year, from the end of last year. I mean, these are staggering, incomprehensible numbers. And this is intensely overwhelming. But one thing, right now, as we are bearing witness to this unfolding genocide in Gaza, a genocide that we are funding with our tax dollars, we must recognize that just as systems of oppression are linked, so are systems of solidarity. And that's where our role as activists come in, and where we fuel up for the cause. One of my other roles is as an actor, and as an actor, I use story and text as a blueprint to breathe life and being into the heart, mind, and soul of the characters that I play. Each character is a human being with a backstory, with traumas, with triggers, and it's all about the human condition, why and how we came to be. And when you immerse yourself into different minds and hearts and worlds, you realize how connected we are, how universal our wants and thoughts and needs and emotions are. And the advocacy space is the same. We understand ourselves through others, and we can understand the depth and the expansiveness of our potential through our differences. But from a very early age, I grew up in the United States. But we're taught early on that our differences, our identities, whether it be race or culture, religion, whatever, they are differences that don't connect us, but rather separate us. This was certainly my experience at school, feeling out of place and other, and not at that moment being able to articulate my experience, but knowing I was a misfit within the school system, a system where you're taught not to question, not to challenge. You're encouraged not to think critically or listen to your gut, listen to your body, the wisdom of your body. You're taught not to dissent because there is a cost to challenging power. We know that our systems are not designed to care for us as human beings. Our systems are designed to uphold nationalism, patriarchy, and capitalism, and to keep human beings at the bottom of the totem pole. It's a lot, and it's an uphill battle, but we have seen unprecedented solidarity and courage from Palestinians and from allies throughout the past month. And it is a reminder that the ones upholding these systems are actually the few, and we are the many. And while they do everything to separate us, crisis shows us that it is innate, our natural instinct, to actually come together in times of need. My parents were forced to flee Iran in the years after the revolution. So they were in refugee camps in Turkey and in Germany. And I was born at one of these camp in one of these camps in Germany. And I remember my mother telling me a story of them moving to a different camp, a new camp, and they arrived outside of the registration hours at night. And this is the dead of winter in Germany, so it's snowing, it's freezing cold. And they arrive and they're kind of stranded. And in that moment, they see a family from a window within the camp gesturing for them to come over, and they create a human ladder to help my family, me and my family, me and my mother's womb, seek shelter. This is who we are. We build ladders, we build bridges, we build community, we help each other heal. And as a non-Palestinian voice, it is my duty to fill spaces and gaps that my Palestinian friends don't have the bandwidth for. I was just in the West Bank this summer, and I mean, even someone who's been aware of the plight of Palestinian people since I was little, who's been in this advocacy space for a while, I couldn't believe my eyes. You cannot believe what you're seeing, and you can't unsee what you see. You can't believe that this system of segregation and apartheid exists in the 21st century, and we are subsidizing this apartheid. It's outrageous. And so with our self-care, with our community care, it always depends on needs. It's not a monolith. For me personally, I often struggle, and I'm sure many people can relate to feeling guilty for taking breaks. But this is a marathon. It's a lifestyle. And this is antithetical to what we're taught about pain. We are taught to avoid pain, to avoid tragedy, to avoid death, as if this avoidance keeps us healthy in some way. But if you are a living person, we all are, there's no escaping these things. There's no escaping death and pain. And so we have to find holistic ways of confronting and interacting with pain head on, and allowing pain and injustice to enter our bodies and move through us so it can spur us into action and not paralysis. The things that I find most nutritious for stamina comes from, as everybody has mentioned, building community for endurance. This is antithetical to this capitalist way of thinking, this mentality to conserve, preserve, reserve, self-protect, that we never have enough, that we have to hoard for ourselves. But really, the more you give, the more you get. It's not about holding your energy back. It's about giving in all of the spaces, giving all of yourself in the spaces where you can feed and be fed. And sometimes that means, you know, going to protests, hitting the streets, and that gives more energy. Sometimes it's being in these spaces together, even if it's silence, in silence. And sometimes it's a Zoom teach-in or reading at home. And as mentioned before, it's important to disconnect, to recenter, because if you want to be involved with something, if you want to talk about something for a long time, you cannot talk about it all the time. So the other thing I feel is important is to constantly stay connected to the why. Why are we doing this? Why are we here? With everything that we are witnessing, it's a lot, and it's easy to go numb unless we keep ourselves connected, stuck on the why. For me, that means being connected to my Palestinian friends and my Jewish friends, radical listening, to continue my education on a daily basis. I mean, we have this endless sort of abyss of the internet, which can be a double-edged sword, but having resources that I'm happy to share, that we can all share, to keep your education flowing, moving, radically, you know, remaining a radical listener. I think also staying connected to the things that make you you. If there's a quote that inspires you or a person, surrounding yourself with the things that keep you anchored to you. Because as mentioned, there's a lot coming at us, a lot of images, a lot of trauma. So staying rooted in whatever keeps you connected to the hope within the struggle, because all of our struggles are connected, as we know, as are our freedoms. And none of us are free until we are all free.
Thank you so much. Thank you for that. I feel like it also, to me, there's just a beautiful thing where we're like, oh, we can feel our wisdom because it's flowing through all of our bodies together. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much for what's flowing through your body, Sabina. Thank you. It's good to be here with you. Next, we are going to hear from Noor. Hi, Noor.
Hi. Thank you so much, Adrian and Sapita and everyone. Wow. We are so, so, so blessed to be in community right now. Like, I don't know, I keep finding myself smiling from ear to ear and my cheeks hurt. And it's like, it's been a minute. It's taken a minute. My name is Noor Al-Huda Tajouri. I am a storyteller, question asker, and investigative journalist by trade. We have a media company called At Your Service. I believe in stories as a form of service and justice. And I'm so honored to just be in your presence. And I have so much gratitude for every single person who showed up for themselves and for their communities today. My gut says that if you're here, it's because you've been doing a series of really hard and brave things. And one of the hardest and bravest things that I believe that we all can engage in, the tool that I continue to go back to, is asking hard questions and asking ourselves really hard questions. And the question that I always like to start with when it comes to that is, what is my role? What is my role in this? How can I change what I want to see? How can I create the world that I want to live in? I think what I've noticed is a lot of times the exhaustion comes from trying to fix things outside of you and trying to change people outside of you, but not having actually sat with yourself to know who you are so sure, and to know your story and to know your history and why certain feelings are coming up for you. For me, like the last 3 months have been not only some of the most challenging of my life, but truly what I've been calling a great recalibration. I come from a lineage of Libyan people. Both my parents are from Libya, and both of my grandfathers are from the city of Derna that experienced those catastrophic floods a few months ago. And I remember, like, the news before we found out about the loss of family and the loss of house, before things even got really bad, there was like a whale that had escaped my body that I had never experienced before. It was something that felt like it didn't fully belong to me. It felt ancestral. And I quickly realized after several sessions of wailing that these releases of tears, of pain, of energy, of suffering are a medicine to create space inside of us so that we have the strength to actually be of service, so that we have the ability to see where we can actually move. How are we connectors? Are we fundraisers? Are we checking in on our families? Like, how are we cultivating and constantly trying to like see what our role in all of this is? And I feel so humbled to be able to even like use our platforms to talk about Palestine right now, because for so many of us, including people who are in the audience or on the panel or whatever, like there have been years and times where like this conversation felt like a really big elephant in the room. There was a hesitation. I know that early on in my journal, so I started my first job at a newspaper when I was 15 years old, and the story that I wrote was about Gaza, and it was about a Iraq war veteran turned peace activist who did an aid convoy there, and I was so proud of this story. And I remember a year later when I went into radio having a Palestinian Christian colleague pull me aside and give me like a advice that like he needed me to know, which was to not ever bring up Palestine in our workplace. And this was coming from someone who was Palestinian himself. And so I internalized that. He wasn't the first, or he was the first, but he wasn't the last to give me that advice. And it really chewed away at me for so long, because it was one of those things where like the presence of the Palestinian people and their story is in so many of the rooms that we were in without it ever being mentioned. It's like, you can pretend like you won't talk about it, or you're not going like that, you, it's not an, it's an untouchable topic, but it never, but it was always there, because you can never like, you can never fully avoid a people and their story that is so integrated into all of ours. And I truly believe that the story of the Palestinian people and the way that what we are witnessing right now has emboldened so many of us to constantly be in our truth is because we also, so many of us come from lands and come from people who have experienced this very thing. And it's like, we're witnessing collectively, like, what has happened to so many of us, and so, and in a way that like we can never turn away from, in a way where we will forever, ever, 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 ever be changed. So to bring it back to asking ourselves the really hard questions, one of the first things that I try to like share with students and community members is that we have to believe that asking questions is a birthright, that we have the right to ask questions that bring up fear in us. And when those fears come up, that we get to, we have the opportunity to move through those fears from a place of curiosity and not from a place of like completely being taken, like taken out from it. And part of that requires us to stay in our bodies. And I'm so grateful to all of the healers and the practitioners on this panel who have given us like so many gems for free, by the way. Like, thank you for your generosity, because the fact that we are sharing all of this right now and in service is so powerful. And it really speaks to what has been said already of like, the power is really with the people. Like, we are here. We are here, and we need you. We need you. We need you to step into your role. We need you to understand that it's okay to have these fears around whatever the questions are, whatever the stories are. But like, the this is all a part of the journey and the quest of being a human being to begin with. This is why we are alive. And the greatest questions that I've asked myself have become for me a freedom in a way. So our last investigation that we did examined how the representation of Muslims and Arabs in American media has shaped how Americans think and our society and our culture. It's called Rep, A Story About the Stories We Tell. And there's an entire chapter that specifically talks about how the dehumanization of Palestinian people has contributed to our American psyche. And so I share that as a resource for people who are looking to embark on what I call the quest of a question and going on their own inner revolution. And I hope in the process, like what I have found is making art outside of like the work that you do is so important. I've realized that the reason like art saves lives, like Hannah, what you were saying, I know that like the poet, the, first of all, your writing and your poetry is so beautiful, but like, and I have been, every time I've engaged with poetry or art from Palestinian people recently or music, it has like filled up my tank more and more. It's like we're seeing pieces of their souls be added to the like collective consciousness. And it's so important that we document these parts of our soul journey so that we can like have these teammates, essentially, like these teammates in our history who we can like look back to. I can't tell you how many Edward Said like interviews I've been watching lately. And I'm just like, you know, my first thought is, wow, I really wish that this person was still here. And my second is, and how lucky are we that he still is? Like, how lucky are we that we actually have these resources to continue to go back to? I could go on and on, and thank you so much for the time, but I will end with this. I just want to give a little pet. The thing that has been giving me so much joy and so much has been warming my heart is seeing Palestinian people with their kids, their children and their cats, which are kind of also their children. And just seeing the humanity, like, regardless of how much the world tries to dehumanize a people, and we have the honor, the truest, most brightest honor to witness the most, the epitome of what it means to be human and what it means to be in service. I hope that as a collective, we choose to be in service to ourselves and to each other with this greater purpose of knowing ourselves so that we may know one another, because I think that the dehumanization of a people starts with the dehumanization of ourselves, and we have to know ourselves first. And I wish you the best on your quest of a question. And as always, we are at your service.
Thank you so much, Noor. I was hoping that you were going to hold up the kitty at some point. I kept looking down and being like, I can't.
Her name is Mayday for chaos.
Hi, baby girl.
Thank you.
She's so precious. Thank you for all of that. And so we've gotten a lot of messages that the ASL wasn't working in the feature, that it's supposed to be in a different pathway. So we're bringing ASL just on to the main place, the main screen here with us. Sorry. We're learning this format. Zoom is constantly like, oh, are you comfortable? Have you figured it out? Well, we have changed and God has changed. So we're just going to keep rolling with that. Hopefully these are good changes. The other thing is people have started asking questions. We won't be able to get to all of them. So if you go and upvote the ones that feel like they're most what you also need out of the thousands of people who are here, that'll help us to understand where to focus once we get to that part. All right, next we're going to go to Layla Fagali. Layla, please come and join us. And sending love to everyone. Thank you. Hi, Layla. Welcome.
Thank you. Ooh, wow. So thank you all for your contributions and your energy, and thanks to everybody who's spending the evening with us. Adaku, your opening really touched me, especially as a child of the diaspora, who I'm Lebanese. My family is Lebanese. Palestine's freedom is my freedom. It is the lands in my body. It's the sea in my blood. And as a child of the diaspora who has been deeply affected, supported, and just taught about who I am and who we are and what life is from the West African diasporas, it really meant a lot to me for you to build that bridge. Thank you so much. And so I come with my ancestors, with our ancestors and our lands, full in my body, so full in my body that it kind of feels difficult to speak about this. I will not lie. It feels difficult to speak. It feels difficult to talk about care right now in this way to this audience, because I am deeply and profoundly just attuned to the pulse of my Arab community right now, my Palestinian community right now. The bodies that we see they're our bodies. They are a degree away from you, every one of you. Our diasporas are the largest on the earth right now. Our collective diasporas are the largest on the earth right now. We live in your cities. We are your neighbors, wherever you are. Wherever you are, we are your neighbors. We live in your cities. We're here. We are real people grieving real families, feeling real things, experiencing these things in the land of our own bodies. So I want to say that my work in the world is dedicated to, I run a community practice called River Rose Remembrance. My work is dedicated to the recovery of earth-based ancestral knowledge for as a pathway, really, to liberation and healing. And it's specifically focused on people from Southwest Asia and North Africa, otherwise known as the Middle East. So there have been so many times, my whole life is a story of, you know, these wars and these moments and these occupations. And I was born into them. I have seen them. We have witnessed them. And for so many of these moments, we as an Arab community have gotten together to respond to crisis. We have gathered our tools and our skills to respond to the needs politically, communally, in all the ways that we can. And in so many moments, you know, I have felt as a cultural worker who works, I work a lot with plants, specifically with plants of what I call the plant sisters, plants of our ancestral land and of our bioregional homes in diaspora, to support, you know, memory, to support ancestral recovery work, to support healing. And in so many moments, I have felt like the response to this kind of experience is for me to step up as an herbalist or a healer, make remedies, send them to my people, create circles for healing, do the things, raise money, I don't know, whatever it is. But to be honest with you, that's not what I'm feeling right now. And it's not what I want to talk about. And everything I'm going to say is part of the land. And every single healing that you have ever experienced, whether it's because someone was touching your body with good energy and knowing how to hold space for you through somatics, or because you had herbs or acupuncture or whatever healing that you have ever experienced in your life, is because of the grace of the earth. And what we are experiencing and what we are being asked to do in the work of sovereignty is about the earth. It is about the earth. It is about the lineages of the earth that have graced us with this knowledge of healing for thousands of years. It is about the earth in your bodies. It is about the earth of Palestine. And it is about every river and every sea beyond Palestine that we are not only witnessing, we are a part of. We are not just witnesses. But I actually want to talk about, I want to talk about power. Something I know about trauma and all my years of trying to reckon with trauma because of these stories in my body, in my lineage, in our bodies. Trauma is not just about the violence that we experience, nor the violence that we witness. Trauma is about the defenselessness that we feel when something violent happens to us. It's about the way our agency gets taken. It's about the way that we cannot have the opportunity to stand up, to defend ourselves, to interrupt the violence that we are witnessing or experiencing. But I want to speak about rage and fear and grief, because I think that's like a lot of what's happening right now. I think that the numbness comes after. I think it comes when we don't know how to process it. When we are feeling those things and they don't feel good, we want to change the feeling, because that's how we've been socialized. And that's part of that self-care thing. We want to make the bad feelings go away. But our systems do not become regulated by us stopping these feelings. There is no remedy for the fear, the grief, and the rage you feel right now, except correction of the violence that we are a part of. The most protective factor of the trauma we are witnessing right now is to reclaim our agency, because that is what creates post-traumatic stress. What creates post-traumatic stress is not having the agency to interrupt what harm is being done to you, or what harm, in this case, most of us are just witnessing. We have power. And I want to say, the people of Palestine, Allah yahmihun, yani God bless them and protect them, for the incredible steadfastness and the incredible power that they model for us every day. They are not showing us their lives. They are not showing us their victimhood. They are not showing us their suffering. They are not taking the time to broadcast in English the worst days of their lives instead of being with their own families and beloveds for us to witness. It's not to witness. They are doing it because they are claiming their power to appeal to our power. It means extending yourself towards action. It means using the resources that you have as generously as you possibly can to serve the life in front of you. That's why we take care of the cats even when we don't have enough water for ourselves. That's why we take care of each other even when things are unfathomable. That's why the children still sing and play even when they have been orphaned. And we, our generation, has the most incredible opportunity right now to be part of one of the most profound experiences of earth and communal and collective healing across our lineages, from the Congo to Hawaii to Turtle Island, where we stand, where we are literally on settled land. We have the opportunity to participate in this from where we are to the communities that we are a part of, even if we are in the US or Australia or Canada or wherever folks are. We are being given the opportunity to be part of the crumbling of empire. We are being given the opportunity to usher one of the most monumental thresholds of collective healing and repair, reparations and repair to the violence that we have been drowning under as species, multiple species, all the species, okay? But this is not a normal moment. We have never witnessed around the whole world this happening in lifetime. Palestine and this moment is monumental. It is a threshold. It is a threshold where we, as a people of this planet, are deciding, essentially, do we choose to delegate all our resources in this moment to a world, a new world that will affirm life? Or do we retreat into our fear, our complacency, our agencyless, our confusion, our whatever it is, and allow empire to persist? And this is a long haul. It is a marathon, like Sepideh said. It is a marathon, and we do need endurance. I'll take two lessons, two possibilities to lean into from Palestine, things I learned from Palestine, things I learned from our land, things I feel in our land and our people. The first one is just that love is our lifeline. That is what keeps us together. And that's what I keep hearing from folks in this space. So this is a time to lean on the love in your life. It's the time to lean in on your community. It's a time to join an organization, get in the streets, do the things, or just call together the people who know you best and dedicate some time to reflecting each other, to co-regulating, and to reflecting and being with each other around what it is that you have to bring and to contribute to this moment. And get creative. Like, I really especially call folks in the US to get really creative about what our power is. Where does our power live? Because we have immense power We have immense power, and do not let people take that away from us. We have immense power and an immense privilege, which means we have immense responsibility. And check in on your Arab community friends, find your local organizers, feed them. If you know how to cook, feed them. You know, there's so many ways to show up and give love and care. And, you know, take care of each other. And then, and I especially want to say that to the Arab folks who might be on this call, like be with our people right now. For me, it's been honestly the only redemption besides the land and this time, which brings me to the other one, which is love is our lifeline and land is love. Everything about this moment is about the land. Everything about what we're defending is about land and the life that it generates, that it feeds, that it nourishes, and the memory that it carries, and the lineages that it connects us to. And the land is our lifeline, you know, and the land is love. And there is land underneath your feet everywhere you go. And you can lean in on that land to help you, to give you that strength, to give you the remedies, to give you the inspiration, to guide the creativity. And again, you can look at those resources if you need specific remedies and stuff. But I also encourage you to remember that the struggle for sovereignty and against settler colonialism means, honestly, us healing our relationship with land.
Yeah.
Everywhere you are.
Yeah.
And that is power. That is power. And that is medicine. And that is healing. So please lean in on that. And Arab folks and others, but especially Arab folks right now, I highly recommend you work with our ancestral plants. Those of you feeling longing and guilt and a desire to connect home and feeling far away and feeling guilty and just feeling unsure, like those plants have memory. Those plants, they are our Teta and our Jiddo. They are the people who have survived these things, and they also are us. And they help wake up these parts of us that are so much bigger and longer and deeper and fiercer than the terror that we are experiencing right now, but also the possibility we are experiencing right now. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We just have a lot of questions that have come in from folks who have been listening in throughout the time. So I wanted to take a few minutes to quickly hit on some of the things that people brought up that seem like resources that either folks here or other folks have already put out. There have been a lot of questions about how do we navigate COVID in this moment? How do we navigate the fact that there's still this massive pandemic while we're asking people to take action, to take pretty high risk actions and be with each other? The places that I have found that have been really helpful have been telling people to mask up before marches, mask up before actions, bringing masks and bringing other practices, and asking people to test before action planning. But I think this is something that has to happen at the local or at the action level, is really sitting together and figuring out what is our protocol going to be and bringing it into the conversation rather than expecting that someone else is going to think of it. Folks are planning so much under such duress right now and trying to take care of so many different factors. So if you can be helpful rather than being critical for action planners, that's always useful, is rather than coming and being like, why haven't you done this? Turning and being like, how can I help with this? Right. That's almost always helpful. There's a resource that Adaku and I and others put together. It's up on my Instagram page now, but it's Aftercare for Actions and really taking care of yourself. I think what every single speaker has talked about while we were here is the fact that this is long-term work, right? I keep saying, I want to be in this solidarity work with you for a lifetime, that everyone who's doing this work, we're really in a lifetime commitment to this, which means that as we're doing exposure, as we're doing the marches, as we're doing the actions, taking that aftercare time, taking that aftercare time to protect your body and to return to yourself. So there's all kinds of practices in there I'm almost always going out and putting my feet directly in the dirt and just being like, I just took on a ton of energy and a ton of charge. Let me put it back down to the earth that can actually handle and hold it. There was a lot of question around how do we engage in workplaces or in other spaces where we're feeling very alone and isolated in our grief, which I think is happening a lot. Either people are feeling alone and isolated, or they're feeling scared that they could be targeted next, or they're feeling all these things. I think, Layla, what you were just saying, really remembering who's actually at risk, whose life is on the line. And even if we lose our jobs, even if we lose followers, even if we, you know, the challenges that we're facing are actually really small cost to pay if we connect it to what we're actually fighting for and trying to stop. So one thing is to keep that in mind. But I also want to to offer to people that invitation almost always works better than shame. So we shame the big companies, we shame the big corporations, we boycott them, we shame our government, shame on Biden, shame on Blinken. We shame the people that we want to shame. And just today, a case is being brought to sue them for this genocidal activity, which is, that's powerful news. But I do think that with the people that we love and are in relationship to, invitation can work better than just trying to come and be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because they're inside themselves asking, what the fuck is wrong with me? And how am I out of step? And how do I do this better already? What we want to do is give them invitations into action. And there are, again, so many roles that people can play in this moment. Not everyone is going to play their role on social media or play their role with a big statement. There's so many other things that need to happen. Conversations with family members, conversations with people who are making decisions right now. So think about what that invitation can look like. There's a model that I, again, posted on Instagram that is the Brave Community approach to discussing Raza, which helps people to actually bring forth, here's something that we can look at together and try to talk about together, rather than trying to bring every random fact that we ever heard on the internet about this into a conversation. It's how can we ground ourselves in shared content and have a meaningful and connective conversation around this. There were several people who were really grateful, Sepide, for you bringing in the fact that we're in community with Jewish folks and Jewish allies, and that they're going through a lot right now. Were there resources for them? There is stuff online. I think Jewish Voices for Peace and If Not Now are doing great work at providing some of those resources. There's a poem from Hadar Ahuvia and Noah Graevsky. That's the 12 steps of Jewish Zionist Anonymous, and trying to think about this as a major portal for people to become anti-Zionist. So really thinking about that, that this is a portal for ending war. It is a portal for ending apartheid. It is a portal for shifting how we hold all of these things. But inside that portal, we're trying to stop the madness as soon as we can. So I feel like trying to hold the duality of that, that's the work of healers. That's the work of organizers. That's the work of everyone who's showing up in this moment. I think I covered all the things that were on here. I think the only other thing I'll say is, for me, watching every day has become a spiritual act to be present with it, to say, I'm taking this action, not because I don't believe it's happening, not because I need any proof that it's happening, but because people are taking and risking their lives in order to make sure that I can actually see what's happening. And some of the things I see are the things that I can use to channel into the actions that I'm going to take. But I do think that making some care for yourself inside of that is actually really important. So I'm really mindful about when I watch based on what else I'm going to go and do, so that I'm not just sitting all day and doing nothing but watching. I'm watching and then taking action, watch and then take action. And if you can think of that as a rhythm that you're in, that I am tuning into what's happening and then I'm finding the right action to take, that can be a rhythm of sustaining or a rhythm of endurance. Is now that I have seen what Motaz has put on, let me go and take my action. Now that I have checked in with Bisan and Plestia, now let me go take my action. And there's not, I don't think in a moment like this, there's not a way to be like, I'm doing enough. I don't think you're going to get to check that box, because what we're up against is something that feels so overwhelming that there's no I that will ever be able to do enough. There is only a we There is only a we, and that we is going to do the best that we can right now to change history. I keep telling people we don't want to be on the right side of history. We want to be the intervention that stops this from happening right now in the present. So thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for asking your questions. Thank you to each speaker who showed up here with us. Thank you so much to Citizen Well. Thank you for our interpreters. Thank you for the patience of everyone who is helping us find what we had to, how to make our offer even better. And don't give up on any of this. Don't give up on yourselves. Don't give up on this struggle that we're in. It's not too late. We are not too late. We are fighting every day to change this history in real time. Okay. I love you all. I love each of you. Thank you so much.
Love you. Thank you.
Yeah.